Blog Talk Radio.
Start your career journey with Cosmic Coaching Center and live the possibilities. Dedicated to career planning, we provide corporate and individual career solutions to middle managers and mid-career professionals. We believe you have to design and initiate your own career path, which allows you to become the CEO of your life. This is why we have partnered with WorkCanadaNow.ca, your online training connection. Their e-learning system provides a practical education, giving you the edge you need in today's job market. So let's start the conversation to discover how we can help you achieve the best of all that is possible for your career and personal goals. For more information on Cosmic Coaching Center and Work Canada Now, visit cosmiccoachingcenter.com. Prepare to live the possibilities.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome to Cosmic Coaching Center Up Your Game radio show. And I am your host this evening, Anna Perech, and I am flying solo tonight as Cecile Peterkin is away and getting some much-needed rest. So we're looking forward to welcoming her back on our next episode. In Cosmic Coaching Center, we provide career coaching and leadership development for middle managers and mid-career professionals. And Cosmic Coaching Center has supported and really guided so many people to navigate changes in their life, whether it's to uncover new career opportunities, to develop confidence and assertiveness, to go after or renew their life goals. And it's been such a pleasure on our end to see people live into their goals. And we enjoy focusing on our clients' individual strengths. And we really do welcome and help them discover their personal potential and their unique value proposition. And our radio show is really another valuable source to gain additional insight, encouragement, and some inspiration to go out and achieve your goals. And our mandate at every time we have a guest on our show or we do an episode is, does this provide value to our clients? Is there something, there's some takeaway messages here? And that's why we love doing our show and we get feedback right away that this is working for me. So we're so thrilled to have this as a tool to bring to you. And as well, another tool is to visit our website, Cosmic Coaching Center, and that's centerwithanre.com, where we provide a spectrum of hard-hitting, useful career information. No matter where you are in the process, and if you're not certain, just there's a contact information there. Just put in your email, and we'll be more than happy to connect with you within the next couple of hours. So tonight, we are so excited, or I am. My special guest tonight is New York Times bestselling authors Adrian Gostick and Chester Elton. So, listeners, please remember that at any time, if you have any questions for our guests or for myself, please call in to the number 1-347-884-8362, or you can join me in the chat room, which I will be moderating throughout the show. So if there's any questions you have and you're a little bit of radio shy, please feel free to join us in the chat room that is available at Blog Talk Radio Cosmic Coaching Center. So, Adrian Gostick and Chester Elton are the authors of 7 New York Times bestsellers, including The Carriage Principle, All In, and What Motivates Me. Their books have been translated into 30 languages and have sold more than 1 million copies around the world. They are the founding partners of The Culture Works, a global and training and consulting company focused on creating great places to work. For more information on Adrian or Chester, please visit their website at theculturework.com. You can also reach Adrian at 435-659-8489 in Chester at 908-230-0988. And if you miss those digits, I will repeat them towards the end of the show, as well as I'm just going to repeat again, if you want to call in, it's 347-884-8362. So I'm just going to bring Adrian and Chester onto the show here. Hello there, welcome to Off Your Game Radio.
Hello, Chester here. Glad to be on the show.
Hi, Chester.
Hi, and Adrian, too.
Hi, Adrian. Hi, Chester. Thank you for joining us this evening.
It's our pleasure.
Awesome. I'm really excited about having you both on our show. I read some time ago All In, and what a magnificent book. I have my notes here that I took. I actually wrote a lot of notes and pinpointed them so we can discuss them tonight. And you gentlemen have kindly gave Cecile and I What Motivates Me, and I'm loving that book. So I really want to touch on this book. Amazing.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That's very kind.
Oh, no, and it's very true, actually. A lot of your information I find is very business common sense, but written in a way that we can understand it and actually enjoyable. I love the little talks about the blondin. The great blondin. That's my favorite.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We often say it's common sense, right? But it's uncommonly practiced, and we try to put it in a way that is usable and actionable to the readers of our books.
That's very true, and that's what I found. There was, it's very well written in the sense of it's very matter of fact and very easy to follow, and that is what, it wasn't complicated at all, which I think some books tend to be a little complicated and convoluted. Yours was very clear to the point. So that I really enjoyed reading. It was a real pleasurable read. Now, I do have a question. When you researched, you did a huge research study when you wrote All In. If I'm correct, there was like over 300,000 people you researched. Was that correct?
Right. That's right.
Now,
yeah.
What was a surprising finding in regards to corporate culture or employment engagement or both? And I direct this to either one of you.
Well, this is Adrian. I'll start. Towers Watson was our research partner, so we had a huge normative database that we began with millions of people, and Towers Watson for us whittled that down to 300,000 people who were in what we called high performance companies. These were companies that outperformed their peer group by 2 and 3x. So very profitable organizations, very well run. And we wanted to find out what they were doing differently during the recent recession. So the research was done, it's very recent. And what we found, first off, surprising was that we've been looking at employee engagement for years. We've been all trying to wonder, you know, how to break this code of employee engagement. But we found that employee engagement was no longer enough. That the highest performing companies also enabled their employees, which meant they were supported, and they were also energized, which meant that they had high levels of energy and a very strong passion and purpose in their work.
You know, and saying that, Adrian, I remember you had used the example of the hamster on the treadmill, right?
Exactly right. You know, the point is, you know, think about engagement. If you're engaged, it's a little like a hamster spinning on a wheel if you're not also enabled, which means that I'm supported, I can go wherever I want. But also, I have to be energized as well, because eventually I'll slow down if I don't have a high level of energy in my work.
So it pretty much is, there's an engagement, but there's something beyond engaging your employees. There's more of a energizing and enabling your employees to perform their best.
Exactly. You know, in the book, we call it E plus E plus E.
Right.
And, you know, we look at different metrics, and we looked at operating margins. And when you had highly engaged employees, you know, there was about a 14% you know, on the plus side for operating margins. But when you added enablement and you added energy, it literally doubled to 28%. So this idea of, as Adrian said, I'm enabled to do my job, I can go where I want to go. But that energize was really a fascinating one to us as well. Not just what you do and how you do it, but why do you do it? Is there an emotional attachment to work? You know, the idea that I don't have to go to work, but I get to go to work. Very energizing. You know, I've got a purpose beyond just making widgets. I'm changing the world. I'm making the world a better place. It kind of makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does, because it seems like it's longstanding. The engagement part, I reflected to, you know, listening to a great presenter, but you have that rah, 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 but there's really nothing to sustain it. And it sounds like the energizing, which I believe you guys are right spot on, gives the employees the why and the connection to the corporation that they're in.
Exactly right.
Okay. A question, if a lot of our clients or our listeners are middle managers, so I know they're taking notes now, and I'd be surprised if they haven't bought your book yet. But a question I would ask from a mid manager, how can I utilize some of this information in the sense of, okay, energize them, but how do I energize my employees to become more, to be more them?
Well, I'll jump in first here. Again, it's Adrian. What we thought when we first started this work on culture, high-performance cultures, we thought CEOs or heads of organizations own a culture. But actually, we did a 180 with our thinking after this was all said and done. Culture exists at the team or division department level. Culture doesn't exist at the big level. As CEOs and senior leaders may set an agenda, they may set an overall arching sort of, if you will, philosophy. But as we know, we've all had bad managers. We've all had great managers. Managers really do make the difference. So middle managers really differentiate an organization. The more great middle managers you have, the better your organization is.
Yeah, this is Chester. I mean, I just want to jump in and reiterate. It's funny when you talk about culture. As Adrian says, you know, leaders set the parameters. They may come up with the mission, vision, and values. But the real differentiator is right at the ground level.
Everybody owns the culture, and that's why I think the book was so well received, is I can create that culture on my team. And in fact, the biggest engager for line employees is that relationship with the immediate supervisor. That's where all those posters and the mission and vision and the habits and all that, you know, high-level thinking really gets executed. So the key to having healthy and engaged cultures clearly comes down to the middle managers. Do they take those concepts and then make them come alive with the people that actually, you know, make the product or interact with the customers? Does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. It makes sense. And you're so right. The middle managers, as far as I'm concerned, is almost like the neck of the organization. It helps turn the organization to where the mandate should be leading to. And if they are able to actually translate that to the frontline staff, what a great way, and it's just a great work culture to begin with. So I'm so glad that you said that in regards to energized and enabling. This gives them a little bit more power, because I feel sometimes the middle managers, those that I've worked with and still have worked with, sometimes feel like they're not, and I hate to use the word, but the word powerful comes into my mind, but it's not power or influence.
Yeah.
They don't feel they're influential. And with your book, it really shows that they are. Would you like to speak to that, Chester?
Well, yeah. No, I think that, you know, the more empowered that any of us are, you know, but particularly the line managers, to be able to execute on that plan, that's very energizing for the manager, right? I'm given the charge to get things done. I'm enabled. I'm given the tools to get that done. And now you let me execute it. You know, one of the things that we found on and on and on, particularly for middle managers, is when I'm micromanaged, I feel powerless. I've got to get permission for everything. And when you go into great cultures, and you know, it's easy to use retail experiences because we've all had a retail experience. But, you know, you go into an Apple store, they're very empowered. They know exactly what they can and cannot do. In fact, Adrian had a really interesting experience with his son Tony around an iPod that I think really exemplifies this idea of empowered employees. Why don't you tell us that story, Adrian? It's one of my favorites.
Okay.
Yeah, the idea is being enabled too. It's even bigger than this idea of empowerment. But my son, when he was 16, his iPod stopped working, so we went down to the Apple store, and when we walked through the front door, the young man took the iPod from my son. He said, "Yeah, I've probably seen it the last days, but I'll take it in the back and I'll put it on the diagnostic machine." But as he was moving it from hand to hand, he dropped it on the ground. And he went, "Oh, shoot," he says, "I'll go get you a new one." 45 seconds later, he's back with a new $200 iPod that he hands to my son, whose jaw has dropped open. You know, at that moment, were we customers for life? Absolutely. You know, the point is, this young man who's working the front of this store was enabled. He had the right training. He had the right equipment at his disposal. He was empowered. He knew exactly what to do, and I thought a rather arcane situation, but he was able to do what he needed to serve a customer within the purview of his job. Now, that's what great organizations do. They make sure they enable their people. But they also, as we talked about earlier, they also energize them. And as we looked in the research at the strongest correlations of being energized, they are ideas that every middle manager can impact. Things like, I'm going to be more energized when somebody cares about my well-being at work, when I feel informed of what's going on around here, when I feel I'm trusted and somebody values my input, when I'm celebrated for the great work I do. Those are things that drive energy levels, and every one of them is controlled by a middle manager.
Very good point. What a great story about the triple E that you have. You know, here's someone who's engaged at the Apple Store level, who's energized, he knows why he's there, and he believes in the product, and he's actually enabled to actually make affect some change into a customer's life from the get-go instead of waiting for a manager's approval. So you can see where as a consumer, if somebody can trust their employees to that level, then you can trust them with your money and you can trust them with service for you. So what a great
story.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny. I was on a plane recently, and we were talking about our research to the flight attendant, and she said, "You know, the only choice I get to make every day is whether I wear the skirt with the blazer or the sweater with the slacks." She says, "That's the only choice I make." And then I get on this plane and I do what I'm told to do. And she says, "I would love to be enabled." You know.
Wow. But you know.
Well, in all fairness, I mean, skirt or sweater.
You know, hey, I'm a woman. That makes perfect sense to me. That sometimes can cause a nosebleed in the morning, so I totally understand where she's coming from. But you know, it's amazing just hearing that story, and you can almost. My first thought is, wow, how much potential is going down the drain in our employees with that kind of control over our employees, and how much effectual she would have been with just a little bit more of being trusted with her decisions. So that's a great story on that one. So I know we're talking about corporate culture and how it makes a great workplace and helps even our customer or employee retention. Is there any evidence of bottom line results, Adrian?
Absolutely not. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, yeah. Thankfully, there is, and that's why. Thankfully, there is, or we wouldn't have a book. But no. One of the interesting aspects is that tied to these three E's. Chester talked about the financial impact, but what we also found was really interesting was the tie to customer satisfaction. That those organizations that have higher levels of engagement.
We're getting a little feedback here, Adrian.
Oh, sorry. Am I there? Hello?
Hi.
Hey, I'm. Can you hear me, Chester?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
I think we've lost Anna. Do we need to hit number one again? I don't know.
Hello? Sorry. The
hey,
joy
you
of life,
there you are.
Radio.
No worries.
Are you both still there? My apologies.
Yep.
I heard some feedback, and thank you for your patience. Sometimes live doesn't really. Your commercial is in Maxwell, or is it live? Well, it's live.
No worries. No worries.
Okay.
Well, I'll... Are you good to go?
Yeah, I'm good to go. So no, as you said, there was no evidence of bottom line results. Okay, so we'll carry on.
No, we did. Yeah, as Chester mentioned, we not only had financial results, but what was interesting too was that organizations that had higher levels of engagement, especially, but also enablement and energy, also had higher levels of customer satisfaction, which is a no-brainer. If you're dealing with an employee who is enabled, they're obviously going to be more able to take care of your needs. If they're energized, they're going to be happier about working there. So that one makes a lot of sense. It's the beginning of the service profit chain to start that wheel rolling. But we also found very strong correlations to employee turnover, and especially as it relates to recognition. The more we recognize our people for their great work, the more they're going to stay with us. Chester could probably talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, no, there's a great phrase that we use, and it's around the customer experience never exceeds the employee experience. So all these things we're talking about are creating these engaged and energized employees. It can't help but translate to your customers. You know, customer satisfaction goes up, teamwork goes up. And there are all kinds of steps in our model that Adrian, you know, talked about feeling like I'm communicated, that people tell me what's going on around here. I feel like I've got a career path, right? I feel like a partner in the business. And one of the big impacts that we saw, and this came from a lot of our earlier work as well, is that, you know, I believe what I do matters, and I make a difference. And when I make a difference, it's noticed and it's celebrated. You know, I'm recognized for my work. And that's a wonderful tool and empowering tool for middle managers, that when I see things going really well, I have a wherewithal that I can reward and recognize and reinforce that behavior and keep that positivity going. So it all kind of comes into play. But I love the idea of, look, I have a belief that what I do matters and I make a difference. And when I make a difference, I'm celebrated. It all seems to kind of come together, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. I'm just thinking of the feel of the energy when you walk into an Apple store compared to some of these other stores. And I'm so glad you mentioned Apple, because I immediately went into my own experience in an Apple store when I was in Chicago some time ago. And I remember feeling that the employees were all engaged and happy to be there. They love the product. They love the company. And it really is a matter of trust. And so when you know, as a consumer coming in, and the interaction with the employee is so positive, it's hard to walk away not feeling that. So you want to engage in more of that. In my line of work as a resume writer, more so, and a career coach with Cecile, is that most people we find leave due to a dysfunctional type culture where they're not trusted. They're being stinted in their growth in whatever manner, and it usually stems into the middle managers and up level of that. So in regards to that, what are some signs of a company's culture that has gone dysfunctional, and how can we fix that, or how can people fix that culture? And I'm not sure who wants to jump in first, Chester or Adrian. Should I flip a coin?
Go ahead, Adrian. I always say, look, you know, in a dysfunctional culture, you really got to take a look at your team. You know, Adrian and I have done a lot of writing on LinkedIn and whatnot, and how do you know you have a toxic boss, and how do you know you have a toxic coworker, and those kinds of things that come into play. But, you know, the leader's role really is to build the right culture. And sometimes the tough decision is where you've got to change faces. You know, where you have that toxic employee or you've got that toxic manager. And you can only work with people so much until you've got to make that change. And I know that's the hard part of being a leader. You know, when you've got to call somebody in and you've given them chance after chance and you've got to make the change. But as Adrian and I, through sad experience, have learned, you know, at first, your people that report with to you and that work with you, they'll blame that toxic employee. But the longer it goes on, then they blame you because you're the boss and you can fix it. So there's a window there that you've got as a leader to take control of your culture. And sometimes the tough decision is you've got to make a change on your team. And what we always laugh about is that you know when you've made the right decision when that employee leaves and the bigger party is after they've left, not before they leave. That's when you know you've made the right decision.
Well,
for some reason, I'm thinking of the Wizard of Oz songs, like Ding Dong Go, Whatever is Dead.
Yeah, the witch
like
is dead, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one thing, let me give you some specifics, too. I think Chester was exactly right there. Those sort of dysfunctional cultures, they're permeated by negativity. There's sort of a sense of defeatism that, oh, we'll never be their competitors. We'll never, you know, there's a lack of accountability. We see this in a lot of cultures that we go into. I know it sounds like a positive, but they're simply too nice in so many cultures that we go into, even Fortune 500 companies where nobody holds anybody accountable. We go into other cultures where there's blame and backstabbing, sort of those negatives going on. There's others where there's a lack of vision or focus. We do everything. Everything's important. They've got 15 values. They have more values than Moses had. You know, they're trying to do everything. You know, there's others where the managers are dictators, and some where cultures are secretive, and, you know, you'll never need to know what's important around here because we'll never tell you. So there's all these sorts of dysfunctions that we bumped into as we consult with cultures at the Culture Works, and you never know until you go in what you're going to find. But usually there are some answers that we can help lead managers toward coming up with something that's hopefully a little bit more positive as an outcome.
Well, I have a question that isn't on in my list. It just came up as I'm hearing you, both of you, speak about company culture and dysfunctional. Cecile and I are working on a co-mentoring corporate program where we come in and help corporations find mentors and mentees. Now, what is your take on the mentoring program and how it could help with corporate culture? And I address that to either one of you. I'm not sure who wants to jump in on that one.
Well, this is Chester. I'd love to jump in on mentoring. I think it's very, very powerful. You know, I wish in my career that I'd had more mentors. You know, people that can kind of walk you through the landmines, can give you the lay of the land, that can really coach you. Someone you can go to ask questions that you don't feel like you can ask in an open forum. You know, having that kind of security and that kind of safety net, I think is very powerful, particularly early in your career. But I don't think you can ever stop that mentoring process. You know, Adrian and I are constantly reaching out to business leaders and to people we trust and people we admire for advice and roadmaps on how to be more effective, to be better leaders, to be better speakers, to be better writers. And I think that whole idea of mentoring is such a powerful thing. And not only in business, but just in life. You know, you look at a lot of the problems that are going on in the country these days, and there's just a lack of good role models. There's a lack of good mentors that are shepherding young people through tough decisions and tough times. To have someone that you can honestly and openly talk to and confide in, I think, is one of the most valuable things a company can offer their employees. Adrian, you know, those are my thoughts, and I've become quite passionate about it lately, but, you know, I'm sure you've got things you'd like to add as well.
Well, no, I'd just say amen to that. That was well said.
And I say amen, too. That's what Cecile and I noticed, that there is such a need to mentor, not just our newer employees coming into the marketplace, but as well as seeing all the potential that's out there that's going down the drain. So that's why we're so excited to have the two of you here on the show with the Culture Works, because it really is in our mandate as well as at Cosmic Coaching. Now, what I'm wondering is, what do you see as a common mistake that you see in workplace culture, and also the reverse of that? What do you see as the most empowering thing you see in workplace culture that people aren't really picking up on, and you're working on getting them to pick that up? I'll address that to each of
you. Yeah, sure. I'll jump in on that one. You know, the most common mistake we see in culture is when leaders tell us,
You know, culture, you really can't define your culture. You know, that's not something we're really going to focus on. We're going to focus on our strategy and taking care of our customers. But they don't realize culture drives those things. Quicken Loans, Bill Emerson, who's the CEO of Quicken Loans, who has grown from a startup, I think it was 10 years ago or so, to the world's largest online mortgage lender, they know what they're doing over there, and they have very high engagement scores. And what he said was, he said, if you don't try and focus on your culture, a culture will create itself without you, and it will be the wrong culture. You can rest assured. And so all those leaders who say, I'm not going to really worry about culture, I'm worrying about products, customers, things like that, there's a culture growing behind you, and it's probably the wrong culture. So that's the mistake we see, is people not focusing on the soft stuff because they think it's soft. As for the positive, one of the easiest things that people miss is recognizing top achievers. They don't want to single people out. They, you know, it's like, I'll catch up with them at raise time. In great organizations, people feel recognized much more frequently than in poor organizations. It's just a simple thing that great organizations do that the poor ones don't.
Wow, very well said. The funny thing is, as you're speaking of culture, and I know culture has been throughout this whole thing, I thought of a science lab as almost like an experience gone bad when you mentioned culture will create without you, and that is so true. A culture is there, like it or not. When you have one or more people within a company, a culture will be formed. End of story. And Chester, did you want to add anything to that?
Well, you know, Adrienne, I thought was spot on. This idea of I work really hard every day, and if no one notices and praises me for it or recognizes me for it, it's not going to take very long before I stop doing that. You know, we talk about it being recognized or celebrated. I think it's all part of that creating an emotional engagement at work that Adrienne spoke to about building a culture. You know, why am I here? What am I really doing? Am I making a difference? Do I matter? And when someone notices and praises you for your good work or pulls you up in front of a team and highlights your performance or copies the boss on your emails, those are very powerful moments that people don't soon forget. And in this point about what good cultures do, you know, there's a ratio of positive to negative that we stumbled across. That it was work that was done by the Harvard School of Business and executed so brilliantly in Avis Budget Rental Car, where, you know, good leaders and good cultures are very quick to point out what's going right as well as what's going wrong. But the ratio has to be about 5-1. You know, and you think about leaders that you like to work for and that really engaged you, it was a positive experience. Because, yeah, when you made a mistake, they called you on it. But when you worked well, they praised you on it as well. And if you can keep that ratio about 5-1, those positive workplaces, again, have shown a tremendous impact on the bottom line and productivity and customer satisfaction. So that's just my 2 cents on. Remember that there's a lot of good things going on. And be aware and praise those. Don't just go into situations looking for problems, because often that's what we do as leaders.
That's very true. And I'm so glad you said that about the why am I really here, and the fact of focusing on the soft stuff, as well as recognizing the top performers. So that way the why, and I mean, who doesn't want to hear have a gold star at the end of the day? So, and that just encourages more engagement, as far as I'm concerned, and more engaged, energized, all the triple E action, right?
Exactly.
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, in how has culture changed over the years? I know that's not a question that I have listed here, but I'm just curious now. How has culture changed in the last? I almost want to say, I was going to say 10 years, but I'm thinking life has changed really quickly, very fast. So let's say the last 5 years. How has the culture changed, and how has it stayed the same? Has there been changes?
So it's such an interesting question, especially with the new generations that are coming in. While we never believe that you should you generalize a whole generation, or you know, say millennials are all this way, or the Gen X's are all this way. One thing we are finding in our research, though, is that there was a very strong evolution in just the last 5 years or so to work becoming even more important in our lives. Gallup has found this, too, when they've now surveyed pretty much every country in the world and have found that the number one thing on people's minds right now is having a good job where you can make an impact, where you can feel like you're making a difference in the world. And you're also taking care of your family. You're making enough to pay the bills. That's important. But what we found in our research is the number one motivator for people of really any age is to make an impact. I want to make the world a better place. And this is a new development. We, you know, even 5 years ago, we were worried about other things. But people right now really want to contribute to making, you know, the world a better place through their work in your company.
Yeah, I would second that, you know, purpose-driven work. The other thing that I think you're seeing a lot over the last 5 years in particular is the mobility of the workforce, mm-hmm. that people don't stay 10, 15, 20 years anymore. I was having lunch with the daughter of a dear friend of mine who works in the entertainment industry. And she's got a great job in one of the hottest shows, you know, on TV. And she says, yeah, but I've been there for 4 years. I need a new challenge. And she's leaving on great terms. Nobody is really expecting her to stay for 5, 10, 15 years. So this idea of I come in, I make a difference, I learn a lot, I develop, and I move on. And, you know, in the new culture, the new workplace, we can't be resentful of that. And, in fact, I think we should be encouraging of that. The companies that know how to develop good talent, that know how to say goodbye in a dignified way, and then welcome them back. Because I think what we're going to find is there's going to be this cycling of talent. You know, they'll come and they'll develop, they'll go somewhere, and there's a chance they'll come back. And we want them to feel welcome. So this idea that if you leave, you're a Benedict Arnold, it's an act of betrayal, we never want to see your face around here again, I think is changing really rapidly. We have a very smart, a very enabled, a very informed workforce, and they're very mobile. And they will leave. That doesn't mean they won't come back. I think it's a big change.
I am so glad you said that because currently my niece has just, she's a pastry chef, and she was at a five-star here local in town here in Ontario. And she said, you know, I've learned as much as I can here. I need to move on. And you can see the generational change because I was brought up in the, if you have a job for 25 years, count your blessing, and that's for what you do. You move up the ladder that way. But now we're seeing the switch off into, okay, you're here, you learn, now you move on to learn. You may come back to this place, you don't know. That's just how it is. It's more of a fluid and flexible motion in the environment. It's not so stringent as it used to be. And that is one thing middle managers who are of a different generation should keep that in mind.
Yeah, one point I'll make on that, too, is that it is really interesting. I've learned enough. The old idea of job security, the younger generation does not believe that for a minute. You know, corporations are having to react so quickly to market changes and so on. I mean, big corporations to have an 8% staff reduction or 10% is nothing. And so this is clearly a generation that has no trust in any job security. And so they do. They look out for themselves and their development, and they move on. And no hard feelings, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, in speaking of the new generation, what companies are right now that you can think of that are winning or losing? And really it comes down to their culture. Is there anything any company that comes into mind, Adrian or Chester?
Well, you know, we've already talked about Apple. You know, you think about the innovations that Apple's made over the last few years. What was it, all Steve Jobs inventing in his laboratory, coming up with the iPad and the iPod? No, of course not. He had teams of incredibly engaged people, very energized people creating for him. You think of Zappos. You know, we've done a lot of work with Zappos, Tony Hsieh, over the years. And, you know, the wonderful culture that he built there. When Amazon bought them for $1 billion after 10 years in business, what did Jeff Bezos cite as the reason they bought him? They said, look, this is a culture that is unlike any other culture in the world. And we can buy other product fulfillment houses, but we can't buy a culture like this. You have to find one that is alive and vibrant. And, you know, Zappos, this year they're predicting $100 million in profit, which will be, you know, a 10% plus profit margin. When you look at online retail, it's typically about 3%. So here's a company that has about a 3x profit margin on their competitors. Why? Because they are great with customer service. People are willing to pay a little bit of a premium to shop there because they know the experience is going to be great.
Yeah. You know, one of the cultures we love to cite as well is right up there in Canada with WestJet. You know, you look at the stuff that WestJet has done in the airline industry, a very stodgy, traditional, you know, as Adrian said, you know, I get to wear pants or I get to wear a skirt, that's about it. You look at what WestJet has done and how it's turned the, you know, the airline industry in Canada on its ear. And by the way, same planes as everybody else, paying the same for gas, you know, unionized like everyone else, and yet so engaged, so much fun, and so profitable. A perfect example, I think, of a Canadian company that adopted culture as one of their big differentiators. You know, we say this a lot, but, you know, leadership and culture are the last differentiators in business. You know, everything is commoditized, right? You can find out the price of anything in 3 or 4 clicks. You know, everybody's got a chicken Caesar salad, right? Why am I buying yours? And it has to do with how the leaders have created the right culture to engage their employees, to engage their customers. It's one of the very few differentiators left, and the good companies know it, like Apple, like WestJet, like Zappos.
You know what? The takeaway for me in that, from both of you, is you can't buy culture and you can't buy leadership. You can teach it, but you can't buy it. So for Amazon to pay so much for Zappos, it's what they call goodwill in the accounting world, really is because of the culture, as you mentioned. Great point on that. And if and listeners, if you want to do a takeaway, that is you can't buy culture. So you can build it, but you can't buy it. So keep that
in mind. I think the perfect example... Yeah, the perfect example for you right in Toronto is the Toronto Maple Leafs, right? They spend gazillions of dollars on players, and they haven't won the Cup since 1967. I just thought I'd point that out. Now, I know for you, 1967 probably seems like yesterday, right?
That's a bit of a poor point right here. I get it.
But anybody. Anybody could have a bad 50 years, Chester. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon to have, you know, 50 years of bad luck.
I have to say, us Maple Leafs fans are the most, what's the word I want to say? We really...
gullible? Is gullible the word you're looking for? You know, my dad's favorite joke was, he says, you know, Hamilton will never get an NHL franchise. Because if Hamilton gets an NHL franchise, Toronto's going to want an NHL franchise, and they just can't have two teams that close together. So,
the word was optimistic, not gullible. We're optimistic.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a synonym to gullible, I think. Optimistic, gullible. They're synonyms.
Well, we are Canadian, eh? Also, and I just started to read it. I had mentioned it in the beginning. The new book that you have released, What Motivates Me? Put Your Passion to Work. Now, can you explain a bit more on how this adds to the all-in culture? Because I personally, this is right up my alley. I love this book. Tell me a bit more about this book.
Thanks. Yeah, we really have had this, you know, had a lot of fun with this book. It includes an online assessment like StrengthsFinder or some of the personality tests or Emotional Intelligence 2.0. The assessment will tell you what you love to do and work. So there are assessments out there that will tell you what your strengths are, other assessments that tell you what your personality is. But what we found was there was a missing piece of this puzzle that told you what you love to do. And that's perhaps the most important thing, because what we're finding in our work is we were going out and interviewing organizations. We found those high-performance organizations had a greater preponderance of people who simply loved their jobs. But was that an accident? No, they really thought about it. putting people into the right positions where they could be successful. And as we all know, we're going to be more successful when we're doing something that we naturally love to do. Now, it may be something we're also good at, a strength, but not necessarily, maybe even something we have to learn to do in our lives. But we just love to do it. And so that's really what the genesis of the book was. It was built, the assessment was built by a couple of psychologists. There's a lot of psychometricians work that went into making sure this really is a scientifically valid assessment of our motivators in life.
Excellent. You know, and the reason why I'm so impassioned by this, and this is why I do the work I do, when I was in high school, they looked at my skill sets and said, you'd make a great accountant, but nobody asked me if I really liked it. And I found myself an auditor and really wanting to just run away really quickly from the boardroom, and I just didn't like it anymore. So that's what propelled me into my career path. And this is what I'm driven and passionate by, is learning what motivates people. So, listeners, if you're listening and you're wondering if you're in the right place, please pick up this book, What Motivates Me. The awesome part is having the motivators assessments here. Awesome. Totally awesome. With a unique passcode. So definitely take advantage of that. So, as we're wrapping up here, gentlemen, I'm loving this time and this conversation. I do want to ask both of you, and I'll address it first to Adrian and then Chester, of all the advice you've received, what is the best, and what would you like our listeners to know and learn from this advice that you would give them?
That's an interesting question. You know, my dad told me years ago, you know, when I was at summer working for his company for a summer, and, you know, and I was just sort of goofing around and, you know, trying to avoid work, kind of. And he told me, you know, he said, Adrian, he says, you're going to work for the next 40 years. He says, find something you're passionate about. You know, every day should be enjoyable. And so, you know, my old English dad told me many years ago that you know, to make sure that I wasn't avoiding work. That's not a life goal. But your life goal should be find something that you're passionate about. And thankfully, Chester and I have. We found, you know, we love to be able to go in and make organizations better. We love to work with managers and help them find ways to engage with their teams. I would say probably every couple of days we get a note from some manager somewhere in the world who's taken one of our books and implemented those techniques, and they write and thank us. And I mean, we pass them back and forth to each other, and we're still little kids giddy when we get those notes, because we know we're making a difference in the world. And so that advice, I think, stuck years ago.
Yeah. No, Adrian's spot on. You know, one of the things that we like to sort of wrap up with in a lot of our presentations and training is, you know, we've done all this research. We've created these wonderful models. We know that the research is rock solid. You know, we've got the case studies to prove it, and they do make better places to work, more productive, more engaged, more satisfying. The one thing I'd love your listeners to take away is don't leave all that passion and all that good work at work. You know, these are principles that also work with your family and with your friends and the organizations you work with after work, whether it be your church or your charity. You know, engaging people and having them passionate about relationships and looking out for each other, recognizing and rewarding, you know, spouses and children and best friends and so on. It goes a long way to build a happy society. So while we've proved it out in the workplace, make no mistake about it, these are principles that work at home as well. And I would hope that some of that would bleed over, because if we've spent all our passion and all our time and energy at work and bring none of that home, I don't think we'll end up being considered successful at the end of our lives. That would be my takeaway I'd like to leave with your listeners.
Well said, and you're so right. These are principles that can be used clear across the board, and I find it hard to imagine that implementing these changes in your work culture will change you as a person, in your personal, in your communal life, in society, in the society you live in the church, in the communities that you help out and volunteer with. Gentlemen, I really enjoyed our conversation today. I would like, Chester, if you can let the listeners know where they can reach you for any more questions or how they can email you and find you online.
Sure, really simple. It's chester@thecultureworks.com. And more information on our website, you know, www.thecultureworks.com. A lot of great information if you're looking to get the books or some white papers. Adrian and I are also influencers on LinkedIn, so feel free to connect with us there. We write 2 to 3 articles a month on how to create a better workplace, another great resource.
Perfect. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much, Adrian and Chester. It was a wonderful hour. I would love to have you back on the show so we can actually talk more about what motivates me, if that's okay with the two of you. And hopefully
that sounds great.
Thank you again, gentlemen, and have a wonderful evening. And I so appreciate your time you spent here with me. Thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, listeners, that was an amazing conversation I had with Adrian and Chester. Please, after approximately 5 minutes after the show ends, the show will be archived. I know some of you are a little shy in coming forthright with a question, and I understand a lot of information is coming at you and you don't want to miss something. So please feel free to contact Adrian or Chester at theCultureWorks.com, and Cecile and I can answer any of your questions as well, too, at info@cosmiccoachingcenter.com, and that's center with an R-E. And really the takeaway for me, there's quite a few that stood up, but what really resonated with me is that you can't buy culture, and you can't really buy leadership. You can develop it and make sure when it's developed or in the development stage that you can actually have some influence over how you would like that culture to be driven. As well as when your employees are engaged and are trusted, there's more of an interaction and a certain energy, which is what we call culture, is in your company. And that is what your clients actually feel when they walk in. They'll feel that trust, they'll feel that engagement, they'll feel that belief, they'll feel all those senses of I'm going to be taken care of because if a company can take care of their employees, enable their employees, energize them with the why, I want to support that. So please keep that in mind as well. And please go on Amazon and pick up their book. It's an amazing book, All In and What Motivates Me. And listeners, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We really truly appreciate you sitting down and giving us some of your time, and I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I did. And let's continue this conversation. Just send us an email at info@cosmiccoachingcenter.com, and you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook or visit our website. And we do have some free products there for you to help you on your path to leadership, and we look forward to hearing from you. So please remember, success and happiness are not accidents. They are really created by a certain way of thinking and acting. So create your way into success and happiness. At Cosmic Coaching Center, your success is our mission. Thank you for spending this time with me. Have an inspiring week.
Challenge, motivation, accountability, support. These are just a few things that a coach provides. At CCC, coaching is a partnership where we walk by your side, encouraging you and developing strategies to help you achieve personal and professional accomplishments. We all have our own inner wisdom, achievements, and experiences we can draw on as a good source of guidance. Past performance normally predicts future success. As we are always broadening our idea of what a coach provides the client, we began thinking of new ways to complement our service to you. iAnthem was the answer. Cosmic Coaching Center collaborated with Eloquent Notes to create personalized inspirational pieces that help our clients stay motivated on their journey. Your answers to 12 questions are crafted into a personal lyrical anthem. Using your strengths and past experiences to motivate and inspire, this creative encouragement will help to support you on your path to success. iAnthem. the orchestra of your past playing the music of your future. For more information, visit CosmicCoachingCenter.com.